This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Phil Clement, who's sitting in the corner of the studio laughing. We're coming to you live from the NHL store, powered by Reebok, on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We're going to take your calls. We're going to be joined by Stan Fischler, the veteran hockey writer, broadcaster, and historian. Have you recomposed yourself, Mr. Clement? You know what the problem is? I watched you again on NHL Live. You're here too much. What's with you?
I don't know. You just broke your record.
What was that?
You got in 2 seconds to air. You're never going to be able to break this record.
Did you have a wet lunch or something? I mean, you're sitting here giddy.
As you walk up the stairs and I'm hearing 12, 11, 10, 9, but you've made it every time. But now you've cut it as close as you're ever going to cut it.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
No, you did great.
I had other things to do. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you.
I assume you're all talked out, having been on for 2 hours?
Not a chance. Roll tape.
You double-timed me again today.
I got the call at 8:20 from our illustrious exec producer, Greg Baldinger, saying, can you do the show from noon to 2? And I said, sure. So away I went, and away I came, and now we're here again. I had my two-hour break between 2 and 4.
Which you went down to the local pub in the...
Yeah, one of the Irish pubs.
Meanwhile, yeah, right. let's get serious for a second. This weekend, the Canadians retire Patrick Waz, number 33.
Awesome.
The Leafs will honor Wendell Clark, number 17, but I don't think they put numbers up in the rafters of the Air Canada Center. I think they just put names up. They retire names, not numbers, which is nice. But the most interesting thing is, coverage of both ceremonies will be available on the NHL Network, which picks up the CBC Hockey Night in Canada production. So in the U.S., you can get it on the network, and I think in Canada you can also get it on RDS and CBC.ca, some or both of those, but it's all good. I think in terms of our fans, listeners, knowing where they can see these two great ceremonies, go to the NHL Network.
And I know that Leafs fans will be glued to Wendell Clark's retirement of his number and his jersey, but the curiosity has to be with the reception that Patrick Waugh is going to get in Montreal.
I think he's going to get a great reception.
He will too, but remember, he left there walking behind the bench, and you know, everybody knows the story where he said, I just played my last game in a Montreal uniform.
And he was right.
Patrick usually did what he wanted to do and usually does. Patrick Waugh's number 33, will be the 15th number retired by the Montreal Canadiens. What are your thoughts on the retirement of jerseys and the at least the level of accomplishment or the degree of frequency with which teams retire numbers?
Well, I begin to get concerned about clubs running out of numbers.
Double-digit numbers. Yeah. You can always go to the 101, 102, but that would be really tough.
No, I don't think we're going to see three-digit numbers on uniforms in my lifetime. And quite frankly, the Canadians have more numbers retired for obvious reasons. This is a franchise that's celebrating its 100th anniversary. The franchise is older than the league. And so I happen to think, it's not just the excellence that you bring to the game in terms of your play. There are players who spent careers and they were beloved figures in the community. And I think it's a great thing to have them honored because it's not just a feel-good for them. It's also great for the fans for whom it brings back great memories. They look at the rafters and they think about the times they saw a particular player play. To me, what's interesting is when I attend some of these ceremonies and I talk to the person who's being honored, I say to them, and I've done this on a number of occasions, how does it feel to be immortalized, to know that you will forever hang in this building?
To get the same answer or different answers?
Sometimes I get a blank stare. because I'm not sure that people always focus on that that type of treatment that they're getting in that way. I mean, it's great to be honored and have everybody cheer for you, and then think about the fact that long after you're gone, your name and your legacy will live on to the thousands of people that will continue to go to the games.
It's pretty profound.
Maybe it was too philosophical for a Thursday afternoon, but that's how I focus on it. Same thing with people going into the Hall of Fame. Here you are, your name and your likeness goes on a plaque forevermore. But that's the great thing about Halls of Fame and having your number retired or your name retired. I think it's a testament both to the organization and the people that participated. By the way, the coverage starts at 6 p.m. on the NHL Network in the U.S., so that either get your DVRs programmed or be home and tune in.
You have a question for the commissioner, Gary Bettman. Our number is 877-645-6696, 645-6696. This is the NHL Hour. Well, winter is almost officially here, but we haven't had any snowfall in this area, but it's cold.
Actually, it was flurrying this morning.
Was it?
When I got up and walked the dog at 6:30 this morning.
Which is the perfect tee-up and platform to jump to the Winter Classic from and to. How are the plans for the Chicago Winter Classic coming along?
I think they're going along well. I'm not actually sitting in my office distributing tickets. We had a little bit of an issue because of Canadian law, and we fixed it in terms
you
of...
You fixed Canadian law.
No,
a lot of things, but this is a first.
No, I didn't fix Canadian law. We dealt with it in a way to take care of our fans. Initially, while there aren't going to be very many tickets relative to the 40,000 that will be available at Wrigley Field, most are going to Blackhawks season ticket holders. And if you're a Blackhawks fan and you want to go to the game and you want tickets and you're not a season ticket holder, I suggest you become one. We're giving some to the Red Wings, of course. We have sponsor needs, and there'll be a few thousand available to the public, not to the same extent that we were able to do in Buffalo, obviously, because there were 32,000 more seats in Buffalo. So we came up with a lottery system where people could register, and we didn't want to run afoul of Canadian law with respect to how these types of lotteries work.
Gotcha.
But we've now been able to come up with a system that will let people either in Canada or in the United States participate in being eligible for buying tickets for the Winter Classic. We think it's going to be a great event.
You bet.
And we're looking forward to it. Interesting that you should bring up the Winter Classic. 1 year ago today, the Blackhawks hired John McDonough as their president. John had been the president of the Chicago Cubs. He brought back Bobby Hull, Stan Mikita, Tony Esposito. He got the home games, obviously, with Rocky Wirtz in the lead back on GN. He brought back Pat Foley to announce. And, you know, a year later, the Hawks lead the league in attendance. They're averaging over 21,000 people per
Seriously?
Game. And that's up 60%. The season ticket sales are multiples of what they were. We've got the Winter Classic. Chicago, as a hockey town, is quite alive and well, and I know that's great news for fans of the Blackhawks.
So in your tenure as commissioner of the NHL, which began in the early 90s, have you witnessed anything close to a turnaround of a franchise as dramatic and as sudden as what the Chicago Blackhawks have been able to execute?
This is pretty startling, although actually, if you look at what's going on in Washington, this year, it may be as close.
But there wasn't the history there.
Washington didn't go as far down, and so the swing wasn't as great. But what's going on in Washington, the enthusiasm there, the great job that Ted Leonsis has done with his ownership group and having Alexander Ovechkin. And that's a good segue, too, because a year ago on Saturday, people will think you're setting me up on this. A year ago this coming Saturday, the Capitals named Bruce Boudreau as their interim coach, and he's done an amazing job. He went 37-17-7, and no longer was interim.
No kidding.
It's great to see. And this year, obviously, they lead the Southeast Division. They're 11-4-3, and they're unbeaten in regulation at home, 7-0-1. So it's fascinating. And the last segue that ties into what we've been talking about, 5 years ago this Saturday, the Heritage Classic was played in Edmonton, the first modern outdoor game between the Oilers and the Canadiens. And interestingly enough, goalie Ty Conklin played that game for Edmonton. He played in the Winter Classic last year for Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow.
And he's now with Detroit. So maybe he will be an active participant in all three of the modern outdoor games.
The most interesting this date in history that I see is 29 years ago today. It's when Paul Stewart, playing his first game for the Quebec Nordiques, had a death wish and actually lived through it. He fought Terry O'Reilly, Stan Jonathan, and Al Secord in the first period. Stewie, you're unbelievable. That's all I got to say. And you know what? There's an appetite for whatever's going on today. There's a keen appetite amongst the fans because our board is
lit up.
Completely lit
like
up.
Like a Christmas tree in honor of the season.
It's all coming together.
It is. Are you looking forward to Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. Yeah, sadly, we're not going to be able to do a show that day because we have to take the day off. But other than that, Thanksgiving is a fantastic time of year.
We're not doing the show next week. You know, I hadn't focused on that.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting week.
No doubt. So when people ask, they say to me, do you and Commissioner Bettman like rehearse and talk about what you're going to talk about? I say, yes, today in the 2 seconds prior to showtime, we talked it all through.
We don't really rehearse. And that will be what will be the anniversary of the first show? Thanksgiving will be the anniversary. How could Thanksgiving be the anniversary of the first show? We didn't do the first show on Thanksgiving.
The
27th, not Thanksgiving Day, will be happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Please do not send me flowers.
You mean I have to stop doing that?
I'm in a particularly good mood. And the only reason I'm going to bring up what I'm bringing up now is because it was written about incorrectly in the paper, which is not always a shock. My oldest daughter, gave birth to our second grandchild this week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. On Tuesday morning, and I had my 25-month-old grandson with me in the office while she was in the hospital trying to give birth, and he was running around and was really well behaved for a 25-month-old, although it was a little tough having some serious business meetings, although somebody wrote that I was watching my nephew.
It straight, right?
Well, no. I found that extremely flattering because apparently whoever wrote the article didn't think I was old enough to be a grandfather.
Your nephew's 24, okay?
There you go. It's all good. Let's go to the callers. Well, let's start with Andy in Florida. You're on XM 204, Sirius 208 with Gary and Bill.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're good. How are you?
Okay, two quick things. The first is I miss seeing Bill Clement on television, and I'd like to know if he's going to be back on. But my main question is the Tampa Bay Lightning. They have Steven Stamkos, the number one overall pick, and I can't believe that there's a lot of games that are blacked out. They're either not on via Sun Sports, or they mysteriously don't end up being shown to the locals that live here when Versus has its big game. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, Bill, why don't you talk about your
I'll be coming
work.
To a theater near you anytime now.
Actually,
you've
been doing games on the NHL Network.
Sure, doing games on the NHL Network, doing some Flyers games, doing about a dozen Flyers games when Keith Jones is out of his seat and at Versus, and I'm doing about 30 post-game shows for the Flyers. So I'm still involved, not quite as often on a national basis, but believe me, if that door opens, I will probably hit my head on the door jamb trying to get through it.
That sounds good. With respect to Lightning games, I don't believe, and I don't have this in front of me, but somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, that the Lightning deal with the local regional is not for all of their games. I think it's like 65 or 70 games. So there's like a dozen games that aren't carried to begin with. And what typically happens is there's a window once a week where Versus has exclusivity, where no other games can be broadcast in the United States. And typically a team that might otherwise not want to play in that window if they're not being televised will play because it doesn't matter because the game wouldn't be on TV otherwise. So it's really more a question of Fox Sports or Sunshine not having the full complement, and that's between the club and the sports channel as to how many games ultimately they carry, and I think their number is probably somewhere around 70. Let's go to Gordon, Ontario. You're on with Bill and Gary. XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, how
awesome.
Are you?
Good. Gary, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but I drive tractor-trailer, and at most of the what they call TA, Travel Centers of America, they have units called idle air, and they're units that you can put in the window of your cab of your truck, and then you can get all the major networks, Fox, NBC, et cetera, and there's 25 or 30. And I was just wondering if you ever looked into putting the NHL Network on idle air. It's not like a pay-per-view system. You pay, I think it's like $4.95 a night while you're parked, and you can get all these TV shows like channels. And I don't know if you guys have ever looked into putting the NHL Network on idle air or not, or is that going to be a possibility, or do you know about it, or what?
I didn't know about it until this moment. That doesn't mean somebody in my organization didn't know about it, but Greg Baldinger, our executive producer, just wrote a note down, and we're going to have the people in our organization that deal with the distribution of the NHL Network check into it. I was glad to hear you say that you watch these things when you park, because the problem, I was visualizing your rig going down the highway at 75 miles an hour with the TV on.
Yeah, no, what they are, they're stationary units. It's a big metal frame. I don't know if you've ever saw them, but I have a phone number if that would help you out.
Mm-hmm.
It's 877.
Yep.
738.
Yep.
7024 is the number that's on the idle air card.
Then we're going to have somebody give them a call and see if they have any interest in carrying the NHL Network. And frankly, thanks for the tip. It's good to know.
And the second question I have, are you guys ever going to have like Luong Guan or Alan Vigneault from the Canucks?
Actually, we had invited them on because they were in New York this week, and it didn't work out with respect to their schedule, but we actually were in conversations trying to get them. I take from your question you're not thrilled that we have Stan Fischler on, but he'll be a very good interview. but we actually tried to get Roberto, but based on the team's schedule, it just didn't work out. But we try very hard to get guests that we think would be interesting to our listeners.
Stan, hang in there. We love you. I know you're listening, Stan. We don't want you to disappear.
No, no. Let's talk to Vadim in Virginia. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is the NHL Hour, XM 204, Sirius 208.
How you doing, Bill and Gary?
Howdy.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys, both of you. I don't know. If you've seen the hit Kovalev did on Agania,
yes,
elbow, and another issue was Ovechkin yesterday with elbow again. So it's interesting, parent going all the time, that elbow come up for a couple games last time. So if you read Philo.com, Berube was interviewed and has a good article about how to finish this elbow. Like he said, players policing themselves. So maybe it's a good come back to the old style if someone... attack your best player. You just send another guy, tough guy, and talk to the best player at the team, saying if he's not going to stop, he's going to get the fight. So what's your opinion on this? And thank you. I will listen.
All right. I guess the question becomes at some point, Vadim was talking about the players policing themselves. Whose responsibility is it ultimately? Or does it fall on one entity? And people say, well, you know, the NHL office, Gary Bettman, your office has to do something about it. Other people say the players need to do something about it. Is this not a sport-wide responsibility, or is there one group that can take care of this?
I think it's sport-wide. It's a combination of factors. One, there's been a lot of debate as to what constitutes a hit to the head.
Sure.
And we've had this discussion, we had it last week, about there are certain types of contact which are unavoidable as long as you allow checking. Elbows, we penalize. I mean, it's in the rule book, and if there's an elbow, an intentional elbow to the head, it gets punished with supplemental discipline, particularly if there's an injury. And so it's incumbent upon the officials and hockey operations, the league, to enforce the rules and protect heads. And we sent out a memo at the end of last week indicating that we're seeing more than we'd like to see, and the punishment is going to get increasingly severe if it doesn't stop. By the same token, it's up to the players to show respect for each other, to show respect for the game, understanding and accepting that if they don't, they're going to be punished. Frankly, the punishment is intended to be a deterrence against future conduct, we'd rather not have the incident in the first place so we don't have to punish. And I think the Players Association has been taking a lead oar in that as well. I think they've been discussing, Paul Kelly on his tour of the clubs has been talking about respect and the need to avoid hits to the head, showing some video. And so I think it's a priority in terms of making clear from a cultural standpoint that this type of conduct is unnecessary and not acceptable.
Has to happen, and at some point it's everybody's responsibility. We're going to step out. We love your calls and your questions, and our board is lit up. We will get to you when we come back on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com.
This is Jordan Stahl from the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on the NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Thank you, Jordan, and I love that song.
So I picked it for you.
Well, no, you don't know the half of it. We'll get a little personal. It's probably my favorite Neil Young song. It goes back to the time, late 60s, early 70s, when I was in college, when I met my wife, who's a redhead, a la the Cinnamon Girl.
Well, I didn't know the history, but...
I'm sharing it with you. This is just between you and me.
Thank you.
There we go.
I appreciate that. And the reason I asked for that song is because I'm going to see Neil Young on the 12th of December in Philadelphia at the Spectrum.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
really, my wife's favorite, artist.
Aren't they wrecking the Spectrum?
Not yet. Oh. Not until Neil is signed off the night of the 12th, and then the big ball hits the... No, it's not happening until after the Phantom season finishes.
I knew that, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk Philly.
I hope I'm not in the seat when the wrecking ball hits the side of the building. That's all I...
Sounds right to me. With respect to our callers, hang in there. We'll get to your calls, and we're not doing an interview now, so you won't be holding on forever. Stan Fischler, I am told, is in a production meeting and will be joining us at about 45 minutes to the hour. So let's go back to the board, and we'll take some calls. And as I look, I see that Kirk from South Carolina has been holding for 19 minutes. So, Kirk, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is the NHL Hour.
How you guys doing?
We're okay. What about you?
Doing great. Commissioner Bettman, I'm now a 45-year-old male. When I was in college, born and raised in South Carolina, so I'm not a transplanted northerner. I used to watch hockey all the time, love the sport, still love the sport. I have DirecTV, and so I get the NHL on DirecTV. But, you know, when you first became the commissioner, as I've gotten older, you know, it was easy to follow the puck when I was in my 20s. Black, you know, I got black tape, you got black boots, black shoes, you got black puck. And then, you know, you instituted the lighted puck, for lack of a better term. I don't know what you called it. And then I know the average hockey fans balked and complained about it. But, you know, I wouldn't think they're really the people that you need the fringe fan like myself who watches, gets the NFL Sunday ticket and watches football religiously to join in and watch the NHL. And I just cannot follow the puck. I don't even know a goal's been scored until the announcer said, you know, and the light comes on and the horn sounds. So I just wonder if there's ever any thought to reinstituting the lighted puck where somebody such as me can follow it again.
Interesting question, and it's one that I haven't actually had to answer for about a decade since we've been off Fox. But let me give a little bit of history. The glowing puck was a great innovation when we were on Fox. It was something new and dramatic that had never been done before. Interestingly enough, the technology that was used for the glowing puck is the technology that's now used in NFL games to put in the first down lines that are superimposed.
Is it really?
Yes. That was the precursor of it using the technology. It goes back to the innovations of David Hill, who runs Fox Sports. I think the technical name of it was Fox Tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody referred to it as the glowing puck, but it was Fox Tracks. And they deserved a lot of credit for doing it. But a lot of people didn't like it. It was still a little primitive. It doesn't work as well as the superimposed line for the first down. When the puck was up against the boards, it created problems. There was sometimes a delay. I think the biggest innovation, though, that has taken place since the mid-90s when we had Fox Tracks is really high-definition television. And therefore, the clarity to see the puck, watch the game, is better than it's ever been. And quite frankly, the more you watch our game, the more you understand that you don't always have to see the puck. You need to watch the flow of the players and watch the play set up, and you'll be able to anticipate where the puck is. And that's part of getting used to the game and understanding the game a little bit more. My guess is as well that with all of the digital bells and whistles and new technology that's available, over time there will be ways that we do new and interesting things to make the game for novices and long-term fans alike even more connected to what you get to do, be it statistics or using superimposition or highlighting to see the game. But we happen to think that the game's being extremely well televised now, particularly in the United States on NBC and Versus using high definition, and of course TSN, CBC, and RDS in Canada. So I think the game has come a long way in terms of how it comes across on television.
So everybody seems to shoot the puck 15 miles an hour faster, so in a sense that may have even offset the advantages of high def. I agree with you. High def was made for hockey. If technology came online that allowed people to turn that effect of a puck track on or off, would you support it?
Well, you actually asked the question that I was answering in my head but I didn't get to, namely with the ability to use multiple cameras, including what isn't necessarily broadcast on television, either using alternate channels on cable or satellite or streaming them on NHL.com, I think over time for all sports, fans are going to be able to more and more customize their experience and take the various feeds that we want. I've been in meetings with people who suggest that, you know, at some point you can get to a place where there are 50 cameras, you know, all around the playing surface and you pick the ones you want to watch. I'm not so sure as a practical matter that fans always want to work up a sweat while watching a game. I think sometimes you want to sit back, relax, and enjoy the moment. But the ability to connect to the game in ways that you want to is going to be increasingly available because of all the digital technologies and all the advances that we're seeing.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool. And speaking of cool, let's talk to Pat in Florida. You're on the NHL Hour. What can we do for you, Pat?
How are you guys?
We're good. How are you?
Good, good. Gary, I'd like to thank you. I got a picture with you at the Carolina Stanley Cup game. Very nice of you. It's in my hockey room. If I could get that signed one day, that'd be great.
If you mail it up to my office with a return address, of course, we will be happy to return it to you after I sign it.
All right. I hope you tell me where that is, but I will send that to you then.
If you go to NHL.com, you should be able to get the office address.
Wow, that's great. And I'll get my picture back.
Yes, I promise, as long as you give us your address.
All right, thanks a lot, Gary. Listen, I got two quick questions. One, the salary cap. They're saying, I've been hearing more and more, that it might not go up next year. It's a possibility. And it might even come down. So I'm a Ranger fan. What happens to a team like New York that we already have like 33 million committed for next year? We still have 17 more players to sign. That's one of my questions. And there's a lot of other teams that are in that situation. The other question is the cap. Do you guys ever have meetings, when you have board meetings and all that, do you guys ever discuss, like, we have so many players that sign these no trade clause, no more. Huge contract, $7 million, 6 years. Is there anything in the works, like the GM's discussing, like maybe give us an option that we'll sign you with a no trade clause, but if it doesn't work out, give us an out. You got to give us an out. Give us four teams you'd like to go to, five teams you'd like to go to, some way of getting out of that. There's so many players that underachieve once they get that big contract. I'm wondering just if there's any talks about that with GMs. Is that a concern amongst the GMs?
Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. First of all, what happens in individual player negotiations is something that happens between a particular club and the player. There aren't league-wide discussions about what teams should or shouldn't do in negotiations. What we do is set out what the rules are, what you can and can't do, but the strategies and the terms, including whether or not to give a no-trade clause, and you're not required to give a no-trade clause, is up to the parties negotiating, namely the particular player and the particular club. Having said that, there have been variations where there have been partial no-trades where players and clubs agree that the no-trade is in effect except for certain other clubs. And there have been instances where a player under a no-trade has said, I'll waive my no-trade, but only to these clubs. So that does happen. But you also point out something that I've focused on, and I'm not running a club, so it's easy for me to say. I always get concerned about very long-term contracts. I think under a cap system, having flexibility is important, and the longer your commitments are and the more of these long-term commitments you have, the less flexibility you have. The reality of the marketplace may be the only way you can get certain players is to sign them long-term, which is a good segue to the first question, namely, what's going to happen with the cap? Clubs and executives are not supposed to be talking about league economics and what's, you know, may or may not happen with the cap because nobody knows, and it just creates a lot of confusion and is a diversion. Bill Daly and I are the only ones who are supposed to really talk about it, and consistent with what I just said, nobody knows. Notwithstanding that, it's likely that the cap will be somewhere around where it is now. I don't think, based on the current economic conditions and the fact that the Canadian dollar relative to the U.S. dollar has declined, I don't think we're going to see a dramatic increase. But also, based on what I'm seeing from our clubs and from the league office, from our projections on revenues, I don't think we're going to see a decrease. I read somewhere somebody was suggesting the cap is going to go down $9 million. I don't see that happening. I just don't even understand what the basis for that is. It's going to maybe go up a little, be somewhere around where it is. That's my best guess today in the middle of November. Again, we know that there's economic uncertainty out there. We know that if what's going on continues and it gets worse, everything, including us, is going to be impacted. But as of right now, we haven't seen a major material impact on our business. Attendance is up and the like. Canadian dollar being down, that's one thing. But the Canadian dollar, despite what some suggest, accounts for somewhere around a quarter of our revenues, not the 30 to 40% that some have been suggesting. And so, you know, it'll be what it'll be. We'll deal with it. And the system, because the cap is tied to revenues, will account for it.
If the cap does drop, does it not drop on a prorated basis across the league to the point where it doesn't punish any team any more than the other?
Everybody has the same cap.
So if
you have too many commitments, you're going to have to make some adjustments in the composition of your team to fit within the cap. And that goes to the first part that I answered, namely, if you've got too many long-term commitments, you could have a problem. And that's what a manager has to do in terms of anticipating problems and issues. For the last 3 years, it's been open season in free agency because the cap's gone up $5-6 million a year. Teams have had plenty of room to do whatever they wanted to do, sign lots of players. But there's always been a reality to the cap. And for everybody to have expected that it would grow continuously at that rate may have been a little unrealistic.
One more comment on the no trade clauses. They happen for two reasons. General managers don't volunteer no trade clauses, but if a player offers a discount to stay in that city, usually have to give something back. The other issue is when an unrestricted free agent is being courted by 10 teams and you really want to sign that team, it's called leverage. When the player says, I ain't signing with you unless I get a no trade.
Also, when players become unrestricted free agents, they're at the age of life where they may have just recently gotten married, they may be starting a family,
sure,
and they want to know that they're going to be in a place to put down roots and raise their family.
Yeah, I understand the motive, yeah.
And from the player's standpoint, I think that's important, and I understand that. Let's go to Eric in Calgary. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM and Sirius with a variety of numbers.
Hello, hello, guys. Great show. I'm a Calgarian living in Edmonton now, so it's kind of weird for me. Yeah, thanks, Bill. I appreciate that.
No, that's tough. I played for the Flames. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be in the wrong city, wearing the wrong colors.
I have a question. Well, do you wear your Flames jersey to Oiler games?
Absolutely. You know, I wear my toque. I wear everything everywhere.
Yeah, and you live to talk about it.
I live to talk about it. I've got a good, reasonable group of friends.
Big, I suppose, too.
Well, they're Oiler friends that I'm talking about. They're not bad. It's not as bad as it was when Gretzky was around. Come on.
There you go.
Anyway, the reason I'm calling, by the way, great show. The reason I'm calling is any feedback on the new rule changes, and if you could just review what the new rule changes were for this year and ideas on new rule changes for, I guess, upcoming seasons. Bill, I know you were talking about the trapezoid rule and the idea of maybe broadening it a bit, and I just wanted your feedback on that.
The two rule changes that were briefly raised at the last general managers meeting, which will be discussed more seriously when the general managers meet in the spring, if I remember correctly, one was on a delayed penalty. It's not enough for the team against which the penalty was called to touch the puck or, quote, get control. They're going to have to get it out of their zone. Which is a little less ambiguous and, frankly, a little more challenging, and I think that may be a plus. And Bob Gainey had a rule suggestion about not being able to dive and leave the ice to block a shot, that you had to have 1 foot on the ice. The rule changes for this year that went into effect were, in no particular order, the first faceoff, with a couple of exceptions after penalties called, is in the offensive zone. A puck deflected off of the crossbar or the post results in a faceoff in that zone. Okay. And we don't take a TV timeout for icing because that would defeat the purpose of keeping tired players on the ice from the team that did the icing. And those three, I think, have all worked very well to keep the flow of the game going. And goal scoring's up over last year at this time, I think about 0.3 of a goal a game. So I haven't gotten any negative pushback on any of the changes we've done. And I think for the most part, people feel that the game's being played pretty well this year.
Teams were starting to take advantage of the TV timeouts. If they were under the gun in their zone, and TV timeouts happen after the 14-minute mark, the 10-minute mark, and the 6-minute mark of the period, teams would look at the clock and say, hey, this is a freebie, I can change. So they would ice the puck. Now they don't take the TV timeout if it's within those times and the TV timeout was supposed to happen. It's a great rule. The other rule change was I believe, tiny, but the faceoff goes if the puck is shot out of play to the closest faceoff dot in that zone and not where the puck.
Yes.
Faceoffs have to happen on a faceoff dot now and not just in a vague area of the ice.
Duly amended. Well, also using the dots gets you a cleaner faceoff.
Sure.
Let's go to our next caller, which is Steve in Pennsylvania, Bill's neck of the woods. You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Bill. How you guys doing?
Awesome. Good. Thank you.
Great to see you back on the Flyers telecast, one of the great spirits of the NHL. Thanks a lot for all you do.
Thank you.
My question for Gary specifically is, you know, we have these out-of-market games that we start the season with in Europe. You know, any thoughts of having some of these games in the U.S. in other remote markets, you know, like Cincinnati, having the Predators play the Penguins, or, you know, maybe the Blackhawks and the Blues playing in Kansas City, that kind of thing, generate more interest domestically to create more fan base in the U.S.?
Good question, and we used to do that in the,
the
early 90s. We played neutral site games, and the view was that we think in our North American cities were, for the most part, in the best places, in the best arenas, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense because it didn't quite have the big event feel when we'd blow into a market for a particular game. Doing it in Europe is a little bit different because there isn't as much immediate television coverage. There are lots of players who come from there and they never get a chance to see an NHL game in any proximate geographic location. And they become big events, special events. We're really not competing with other sports to the same extent. So while we think the premier games have worked very well in Europe, we're going to do more of them. As I remember back 15 years ago, before actually I got here, the neutral site games, We thought probably didn't give us as much impact in North America as we would have hoped.
Say nothing of the inconvenience of it, the setup of it, the travel for the players and the teams. I mean, there's
which isn't logistics. Well, we have that in Europe as well, except we get to do those at the beginning of the season.
There you go.
Good. Should we take another call? Alan in Pennsylvania as well. It's all in honor of you, I suppose, in having the Stanley Cup. You didn't tell us about that. You should probably mention it to us as well, but we'll talk to Alan first. You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just curious, the International Scouting Services released their first preliminary rankings for the 2009 draft. I was just curious of how they rank the players. Is it based on anything in particular? Is it based on the desire for certain teams to have a certain type of player?
Actually, I think they go about it by scouting as many players as possible and making an assessment as to who they think has the best skills and is the most likely to be successful playing hockey at the NHL level. There we go. Now, you want to talk about the Cup?
It was an unbelievable day from start to finish, including the fact that we had to drive the Cup overnight with a benevolent PGA caddy and his buddy. Picking up Mike Bolt at the Toronto airport at 7:30. They drove into my driveway last Saturday morning at 4:15 a.m. The Cup event was nothing short of sensational. It was one of the greatest outpourings of well-mannered, perfectly behaved fans by the thousands that came out. We raised over $55,000 for charities.
Well, the part you left out in telling the story is you had the Cup for the day.
We had the Cup for the day, and yes, we built a charity event around it. Not to say that there weren't a few bottles of nice French champagne that were consumed in my kitchen from 7 p.m. till about midnight after the event.
From the Cup?
From the Cup. I poured the and the rule, the Hall of Fame rule is that when anybody drinks from the Cup, it has to be held by someone whose name is on the Cup. So I still have a little bit of muscle spasm in my lower back because 35 pounds plus champagne does weigh a little bit after 3 hours.
It probably wouldn't have hurt as much if you got to do that when you first won it.
Yeah, really. It was just sensational. I can't say enough about the turnout of the people in the Philadelphia area. There were Devils fans there, Penguins fans, Rangers fans. Yes, the predominance was Flyers fans, but fans that came, I can't thank you enough. For those that we had to turn away before you got even into the parking lot, that was to save you from having to stand in line for 3 hours and not get a chance to have your picture taken with Stanley.
And on that note, they want us to go to a break. We will be back with Stan Fischler right after this break.
Hi, this is Andre Kopitar with the LA Kings, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, and let the record show this song was a request by Bill Clement.
I'm proud to have been a Rare Earth fan, even though the guys in Toronto at the XM studio had no idea what I was talking about. They said they're going to have to go up to the vinyl library.
I'm surprised they knew what that was. We've kept Stan Fischler waiting for too long. Stan, are you on with us?
Yes, I am, and I didn't mind waiting.
Well, thank you, Stan. It's good to have you with us. You have been in this game for six decades, doing every type of reporting in every media that's ever existed, and you've been called the Maven. How did you get that nickname?
Well, back in 1970 in New York City, there was a very famous product called Vita Herring. It came in a jar, and they did a radio commercial with an old vaudevillian by the name of Al Kelly. His real name was Al Kalish. He came from my old neighborhood in Brooklyn, Williamsburg. And he did this kind of funny routine, and he was called the Herring Maven. And it was very, very popular for a number of years. And the fellow who was editing Hockey Illustrated magazine had me do a monthly column, and he said, well, we're going to call you the Hockey Maven. Who was I to say no? I mean, Mavenhood doesn't come often in my life.
as long as he wasn't thinking you were like dead fish.
And some of my columns worse.
Well, we'll get there in a second. When was the first time you went to a hockey game, and what got you hooked?
My first game was in 1939. It was when the Rangers had a farm team called the Rovers, and they played Sunday afternoons. They were doubleheaders. And originally, my father was supposed to take me to see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And when we got out at the train station, which was right by the old garden, 50th and 8th, it was pouring, and we didn't have an umbrella. And he said, we're not going to see Snow White. We're going to a hockey game. I didn't know what a hockey game was, so I started to cry. My father always did the opposite of what I was crying about, so he yanked me into the garden, and I saw a hockey game, and I actually loved it. And the next day I went to school, that was in the third grade, and Miss Gould had us do show and tell, and she called on me, and I did a hockey goalie, because the goalie was the guy who fascinated me, and she gave me an A. And I said, well, this hockey ain't bad. So we got rid of Snow White the following Saturday. Sunday we went to another hockey game, and I never stopped going.
That's an incredible story, both in terms of the serendipity of the rain and the parenting skills to which you were subjected.
But did you ever get to see Snow White?
Well, yeah, I said that following Saturday. We got Snow White.
Oh, you did?
Way
good to know.
On the Saturday. And then after that, it was... hockey every Sunday. And in fact, I just opened the door for the Vancouver contingent, so they're all happy here. Anyhow, the situation was very conducive for a kid, because you saw a doubleheader. And then when I got old enough, my parents would let me see the Sunday afternoon doubleheader and a Ranger game at night. And that was three hockey games all together in one day. And believe me, that was the most fun.
Incredible. What converted you into a writer from being such a passionate fan?
Well, I go back to that third grade class. The teacher asked us to write a story about anything you wanted to write about. And for some reason or other, I decided to write what it would like to be, how it would be to be a shoe, from the conception of the shoe to the putting it together. And I got an A for that. And instinctively, I felt the urge to write. When I started going to the hockey games, instinctively, at the end of every game, on the back of the ticket stub, I would write a little précis about the game. And then that wasn't enough room, so the programs had a lot of white space around the rosters. So I still have them in my scrapbook, and I would write a story about the game. And in all fairness, I must tell you, it was very biased. If my team lost...
Some things never change.
If my team lost, I would blame the referees.
As I said, some things never change.
Right. So anyhow, so the writing thing was an instinct, and that I wanted to convey my thoughts, and I kind of liked the playing with words, and I felt I'd become a wordsmith after all was said and done, because of all the reading that I was doing.
Well, you've written, I think, somewhere over 90 books, some of them with your wife Shirley.
That's correct.
What do you have, a printing press in your office?
Well, again, it's something that's fun. I'd never do this if it wasn't fun. I mean, some of the books we did, like the first hockey encyclopedia, that was a challenge because I'm not good with numbers. And my wife really made that book because she was able to handle the computer and she was able to handle the numbers without having a nervous breakdown, which I would have had. But books, I ghosted Don Cherry's book. I mean, that was just a load of fun. I did Derek Sanderson's book, did Brad Park's book, and this is all labor of love. I mean, it's the old story. I remember a Buffalo writer named Charlie Barton, who covered the American League team before they came to the NHL. And Charlie, somebody once interviewed Charlie and said, well, how do you like your job? He says, what job? This is all fun.
You're absolutely right. So speaking of the fun, you now also work for the MSG Network. You cover all three New York and New Jersey teams. How did that conversion come about?
Well, I have been a print guy all my life until 73, when the World Hockey Association was flourishing. And I got a call from Boston. The New England Whalers were then in Boston. They wanted me to do TV analysis, and I had wanted no part of it. I thought it was an insult to get into TV. But a friend of mine named Eddie Andelman, who was a Boston broadcaster, talked me into it. And when I saw the amount of numbers on the paycheck, I said, well, this TV stuff's good for me. And, you know, it was fun in a very crude way in the early days, and now it's just, you know, so different. And it's still a lot of fun, but, you know, the way what we have replays, and, of course, as you guys know so well, you can watch a review of a goal. Last night I was at the Garden for the Ranger game, and, you know, we close play, review, and that's part of the melodrama that's different than it was in the old days, and it's fun.
It is fun. Speaking of fun, your other interest is the subways. People may not know this about you, but you're a sociologist and you're an expert on underground rail systems.
Well, I've written about 8 books on railroading, trains. I just did a history of the Long Island Railroad, but the train thing happened. And the subway was built right in front of my house when I was 3 years old. When I was 5, it was finished. And this train went straight to Madison Square Garden. So were it not for the subway, I don't know whether we would have gone to the Garden that easily. So the subway led to my love of hockey. And I've been a train nut ever since I got my first set of Lionel Electric trains. And that was coincidentally the year that I started going to a hockey game. So the love of hockey and trains have been parallel.
You've probably conducted thousands of interviews, either for print or on television. Who are your two or three best memories of interviewing whom or whomever? That wasn't very good English, but you know what I meant.
Well, obviously, the Stanley Cup is always a great one, and I was there when the Islanders won their first cup in 1980, and that was a tremendous experience. My most fun interview, because he was a fun guy, was Mike Milbury, then when he was a player. In fact, a guy writing a column for Newsday said that Milbury was such a good interview, you should do him at the end of the first and the second periods. And, you know, there have been tough interviews. I had a tough interview with you, Commissioner, back in 95 when the Devils were threatening to move. And, you know, parts of the business are just plain fun when you get characters, and other parts when you're dealing with hard news, then it's not necessarily fun, but it's part of the business. But you know, compared to being a war correspondent, this is a piece of cake.
We're talking to Stan Fischler, the Herring Maven. Stan, talk as briefly as you can, because they're going to cut us off soon, on the biggest changes you've seen in the game in 6 decades.
Oh, that's easy. First of all, the goalie face mask. Secondly, the curved stick. Thirdly, helmets. When Jacques Plante put on the helmet for the first time and I was there at the Garden, that totally changed things. Every other goalie is wore a helmet now, and everybody's got a helmet. The helmet, a face mask. And he plays wearing a helmet. But to me, and I was there back in 52 and Bernie Jeffrion came to the Garden, a slap shot. Bernie Jeffrion was the first to really do it well, even though it was a flat wooden stick. The slap shot, tremendous change. Tell people today that never was a slap shot before 52. They think you're crazy, but that's the way it was. So those are the most dramatic changes to me.
Stan, gotta let you go. You were great as always, and I hope to see you soon with your joke of the week.
Pleasure to be on with you.
Stan, thanks very much. Stan, for the great Stan Fischler. That'll do it for another NHL Hour. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We're going to take next week off, Gary. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Same to you and all of our listeners.
So instead of having a great week of hockey, have a great 2 weeks of hockey until we are back. Our thanks to Mike Trigiani working the board in Toronto, Dan Cronin working the board here in New York. Coming up next, as usual, Phil Esposito and Mike Ross are in the slot.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.